One more note, and I will give you a chance if you like. Now, you'll notice I have this flip board here, and now it's not really set up for a room this size. It's hard to see even now. But if you would like to see what's on the flipboard, you know, eventually my vision or hope, at least here, would be to have some sort of screen, and then we could put a visual up there, and maybe at some point we'll have that. I would love to have that happen. Today we just have the flipboard. If you'd like to move forward, there are actually, you know, three open pews up here. I know, it's hard. Psalm 22. Psalm 22 has been on my mind since we began our series of worship based on the Psalms. And it's a psalm in which I find almost the entirety of my own faith, my grappling, and also the story of Jesus. If that sounds lofty, well, it is. But Psalm 22 is like a sphere. It's like a globe, like our own globe. And if we take the time as we approach Psalm 22 to slow down, we can be drawn into its gravity. We can be absorbed, if you allow me to use that metaphor. Think of an asteroid or perhaps even a spacecraft entering the Earth's atmosphere. If you're going too fast, you're just going to skip right off the surface of it. And you won't really see the richness here. But allow yourself to slow down today and read and be engrossed in this psalm. It really is a world in itself. Psalm 22 is perhaps the most obvious place where we see Jesus in the Psalms, or at least where Jesus sees himself. You remember on Good Friday that the very first verse of Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus quoted verbatim. Also within the psalm, I'm going to flip this over so we have a fresh sheet to write on. Also in the psalm, we see Jesus' life and suffering with incredible detail and even the nuances of what's predicted here unfolding. For instance, a verse like when they divided his garments and cast lots for them, came true in Jesus. But even before Jesus quoted this psalm and fulfilled it, providing this profound revelation that he was the one of whom these words were speaking, even before that, the psalm stood as scripture, as a lament, as a song of sadness and sorrow in God's people. Now, I'm going to give you a visual aid here. That's what this is, the chart. And I invite you, if you'd like to reproduce it on your own piece of paper or on the back of your bulletin, if you have a pen to do so, scribble on something that you can maybe take home if you like. But I'll follow along, and I'll tell you what I'm writing so that if you can't see it with your eyes, then you can at least try and reproduce it. In the middle of your page, I'd like to invite you to write four words. He has done it. He has done it. And then if you want, make a nice tight circle around those four words. He has done it. That is the core, the essence, and the ending of Psalm 22, if you look at verse 31. He has done it. Now, before we come to that climactic, proclamatory shout, though, I want to invite you to draw a sort of spiral. And you go down a little bit, and then you kind of expand it as you come up, getting bigger. This is sort of like, as someone in the first service noticed, a Fibonacci sequence if you're a mathematician, or a golden spiral if you're an artist or a geometry expert. But it comes to the center after having meandered around a little while. That's the point. One of my favorite geometric shapes. If you're thinking, what in the world is he talking about? Well, Google it a little bit. It's fun to think about the mathematical nature of God's creation. At the very top of the spiral, I want to invite you to write the word lament. Lament, L-A-M-E-N-T. It means a song of sorrow or suffering, which is how Psalm 22 begins, isn't it? My God, why have you forsaken me? The words are gut-wrenching, and the groaning and the experience that's described in these first, especially first eight verses, is so painful that sometimes we don't allow ourselves to enter into the reality of what's expressed here. I am a worm and not a man. And yet there are times when we lament, are there not? As much as we can read a book like we did at Alexander in the, et cetera day. Lament is never funny when we're in the midst of it. And I'm sure that you have had days where you have felt just like that. And when people encourage you to look on the bright side of life or something like that, you sort of feel like punching them in the face. Lament is the song of humanity. Before it was the song of Jesus, it was the song of God's people, living in the midst of a world in which we do. There is so much that is lamentable. And in recent history, even in the last few weeks, as you look around, as you hear, as you listen to the radio or the internet or whatever you listen to, I'm sure that you have had cause to lament. Now, over down the arc a little way, down the spiral, I want to invite you to write another word, a second word. There will be four. Actually, there'll be more than four, but four stops along the circle. The second word is incarnation. Incarnation. Do you know, if you have studied Latin or know etymology a little bit, incarnation, sort of the construction of it means becoming meat. Do you realize that? The word in the middle is the same word for carnivorous is based on that same word. Incarnation, becoming meat, in other words. God, who in his glory, in his wonder, in his majesty, in his almightiness, became meat, or flesh, if you want a more friendly word. The incarnation was the first scene in the unfolding drama. Well, it wasn't the very first scene, but it was the first scene in Jesus' life when he was born into this world of pain. He became meat, thrown to the wolves, as it were, thrown into the confusion, that which unfolded even just shortly after his birth with King Herod. You know how that story went. There was so much that was lamentable in Jesus' life that it's almost overwhelming to read. And he predicted it. He spoke plainly, even as we heard in our gospel reading today, he predicted that this would be the shape of his life. It would be lamentable. It would be full of sorrow. It would be full of suffering. And not just the incarnation, but what it led to. What it led to in terms of him welcoming and embracing all of the mess, all of the sin, all of the dysfunction, and even that which rose up in righteous wrath against the Son of God, this religious elitism, this properness against which Jesus himself offended. The incarnation, of course, led to Jesus' arrest, his betrayal, his crucifixion, his false trial, and then his death on the cross. And that is where the words of Psalm 22 really come into sharp relief. As he articulates the experience of all humanity, as he takes this every man and every woman lament upon himself in a way that we really only begin to understand, Jesus cried out the cry of all humans' pain. My God, why have you forsaken me? Articulating, putting into words the need that we all have for God himself, his closeness, his intimacy. And yet in that moment, Jesus experienced the absence of God in a way that even now baffles even the best of us. It's looking at the incarnation, it's studying it, and everything that it led to, the crucifixion, the resurrection, it's looking at this drama, which begins to change our lives. It begins to reorient us. And down the arc a little bit, I want to invite you to write, courage to listen. Courage to listen. As I shared a couple of weeks ago, a teacher, Erwin McManus is his name, was making a speech that I was listening to in a recording, and he said, courage is not the absence of fear, it's the absence of self. This passing comment has been lodged in my brain, my sort of spirit ever since. Courage is not the absence of fear, it's the absence of self. It's a big thought, and I know we're kind of swimming in big thoughts today, but I share it with you because it really means you don't have to worry about what other people think of you. That's what courage is like. You don't have to worry about what other people think of you. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about Him. And as we see the unfolding drama, as we witness, as we become familiar and even engrossed and absorbed by and even obsessed with this unfolding drama of Jesus, the one who came, the one who lived and died and suffered and then rose, and the one who now continues to build His kingdom, as we become fixated on Him, as we watch Jesus, our lives seem to become manageable as they fade in importance in our own minds, and we begin to consider the lives of others in love, reciprocating, overflowing, and sharing that same contagious abundance of love that Jesus had for us. See, it's a big thought, but the incarnation, the story of Jesus, His death, His resurrection, His life within us gives us the courage to really listen to one another. It was shared with me when I was in seminary, and this is maybe a little bit painful to hear, and I don't apologize for it. It is what it is. But it was shared with me in seminary by two people who attended Grace Lutheran back in about 2005 or 6 or something like that. Maybe some of you weren't here at that time. But there was a couple that was attending here, and they'd been attending here for about 7 years. And they were telling me that we really like Grace Lutheran Church. And I said, oh, that's interesting. You know, tell me about that more. And they were describing that, you know, they were really committed to coming here. And they, they're still members. And I won't mention their names because I don't want to embarrass them. But they said, it took real dedication. It took real perseverance for us to stick it out and become part of this congregation. They said, for about the first 6 years or so, people didn't call us by name. 6 years. I don't share that to shame anyone or to embarrass you, but just to speak reality. And I thought, boy, these people are very committed. 6 years is a long time to wait. Most wouldn't. They were lifelong Lutherans, and they had decided that they wanted to put down roots here. But I think we can do better than that. I think we can have the courage to listen to each other and to learn not just each other's names, but about our lives. And you know, the most challenging thing, the most difficult thing is when you ask someone, well, how's your day and how's your life going and how's things? And they say, fine, it's fine. How about you? And you might say, fine, oh, great. Have a wonderful rest of the day. Okay, you too. We can listen to one another with courage. We can be patient with one another. And we can let that guard drop. You know, you might have the worst day ever going. And you might come here and you might say, oh, things are okay. I'm holding it together. No, they're not okay. If you're having a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day, then say it. And tell it to someone who's willing to sit there and listen to you. There are a few of those around. Risk it. Share how broken and messy your life is. Because if you don't, then we're all losers. The last word I'm going to write here, transparency. Transparency is a word that I try and describe myself by when I'm being hopeful, when I have taken my own advice and risked and shared what is actually really happening. Transparency is a goal of mine. And I would share it as a worthy goal that you could become attaining to, transparency. You know what transparency is? Transparency is what comes from having courage. Nobody really has anything against me. I know you all love me. And so if I come across as a complete disaster, then I'll be here next week. And so will you. And we'll find a way through it. If I come off as embarrassing or awkward or just somehow wrong, then you'll be my friend next week. I'm pretty sure of it. That's what friends and trusted family are. And so transparency is not a scary thing anymore to me. It's actually an invitation to just stop trying so hard. Stop trying to work at cultivating everybody else's opinion of me. Now, I'm listening to myself speaking, and, you know, this is, as I said, it's a goal. It's ongoing. I never do a perfect job at this. But it seems to me as we come to the center and see Jesus in the midst of us, as we see Jesus in each other, really, this is what we're talking about, isn't it? As the scriptures, and if you're familiar a little bit with some of those most profound, in my opinion, most profound parts of the New Testament, we see each other, and we see actually then the transparent selves that we allow to show, and then in the midst of that, the miracle is that we see Jesus. That's the point. You look into the life of a brother and sister, and you stop seeing what they project, or that sort of shell, that image, that shield, and then you see Jesus. And Jesus comes alive when you see him in the lives of each other. And this, therefore, is the invitation that I'd like to extend to you, dear friends. In the light of all of this, in the light of the lamentable situation in our world, the story of Jesus who has come into it and has redeemed it by his resurrection, in the light of all of the trust then that permits us to have with one another, I invite you then to shine. Shine with his glory. For he is the one who is revealed in your life when you allow all of those other things to drop, and when you come simply with empty hands and you say, Lord, here I am, your mess. Take me and mold me and shape me to be your body and your spirit and your presence in the world. We come to the central proclamation, this shout. I'm going to write one more phrase up there, which is a part of verse 27, I believe, if you're looking at the psalm. This is the last phrase that you can write on your diagram if you're following along. It's this: all the families of the nations. All the families of the nations shall proclaim. So we're making a slight abridgment in verse 27, going to verse 31. But all the families of the nations is mentioned, I think, in verse 27, and then shall proclaim is the verb in verse 31. All the families of the nations shall proclaim. What does this actually mean? Well, dear friends, it means that all of the people in the world, but it's a peculiar way of describing it, isn't it? It's not just the nations, but it's the families of the nations. You might be unfamiliar with all of the people in Canada, but you know your family, and you know this family. And therefore, from these intimate cells, from these trusted small groups, these relational nests which we find ourselves, from that place, all the families of the nations shall proclaim that he has done it. There is no bright, shiny, clear-cut, easy ending here except for Jesus himself, who lives forever. There is no easy-to-apply advice which I'm inviting you to go and shape your life by except simply Jesus himself, who stands ready to embrace you, to take you in his arms and to give you another chance. There is no giant to-do that I'm tacking on to your list except an invitation to be held by Jesus, the Prince of Peace. For in the midst of everything, for in the midst of you and in the midst of me, he has done it. Amen. And now may the peace which comes from worshiping our risen Lord Jesus guard your hearts and minds in his presence forever.